All right, everyone, this is a hot one. This is a fantastic episode of Coaches to the Moon. My guest today, Braden Rees, must be one of the busiest men I've ever had on the show, but you wouldn't even know it. He is fantastic. Not only is he the founder and owner of some hugely successful, internationally acclaimed advertising, digital marketing, and PR agencies with over 5,000 clients on his books. He's also one of Australia's top 100 entrepreneurs and Australia's best live singing drag queen. There you go. How does he fit it all in? That's one of the questions I asked him today. Where does he get the energy and the motivation and the organization to manage so many teams, so many clients in so many different areas of the entertainment and service industries? But also, how does he get the best out of those clients? And what are his tips for keeping your clients accountable to helping you do your job? Something that is very, very important in the coaching and service-based industry. I know I was super interested to learn how he did it. And also, basically, Braden's a super interesting guy with a super interesting story. He's very fun to talk to. He holds no punches. He's super fun and he's super energetic. And I really enjoyed this podcast. Now, a little disclaimer, we had some tech issues in this one. So we recorded straight off of the Zoom. So if the quality is not where it normally is, don't worry about it, because the quality of the conversation and the advice you get from Braden is out of this world. So I really hope you enjoy this one, guys. Here he is, as promised, Braden Rees on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I am joined today finally by a man I've been trying to get a hold of for a good 8 days now, Mr. Braden Rees, who has an absolute litany of business names and accolades behind him, from running Axis Global Digital Marketing Agency, Sweet Release, Soiree Cabaret Productions, getaqueen.com, plus Australia's best live singing drag queen. Goodness gracious me, Braden, I don't know how you do it. Mate, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here today.
No, thanks for having me, Alex. You know, I don't know how I fit it all in either, considering at the same time I'm now studying a fucking law degree. I don't know. I really don't know how. Yes. I decided, you know what, why not add one more piece of paper to the CV? And part of my career had always been to go in the commercial direction. So I figured, you know what, why not add law to the mix? I have a lot of clients overseas. They generally land themselves in hot water in their own professions in some way, and we try and navigate that as a publicist. But yeah, I figured, well, rather than try and navigate law without a piece of paper, how about I just go get one? So the end game here now over the next 2 years in the lead up to graduating from this extra last piece of education is to turn Axis Global into an international law firm and marketing and PR agency, which is halfway there. So that's the direction. But okay. Yeah, no sequence today to disappoint the viewers. If you're looking for me in drag, go to getaqueen.com. But yeah, if you want to see what I look like dressed as a chick, go check it out.
Well, mate, I was about to compliment you. You flashed some of your jewellery when you had your hands up there. You were looking absolutely phenomenal.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit of frosting, as they said in the 2004 pick, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. So
frost yourself. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Love them. We watched 10 Things I Hate About You a couple of days ago. We had a rough day. My wife and I, we were like, we need something chill. So we had Thai food and watched 10 Things I Hate About You. What a movie. What a film. So, mate, yeah, as we said, you're a busy boy. Law degree sounds absolutely mental. Did you, obviously, you've started lots of very successful businesses across a range of areas,
yeah,
entertainment and PR and marketing. Did you study anything to get to this point? How did you go from school age into doing what you do now?
Yeah, look, in school, I My education was always around working with people, and I thought I loved people. Turns out I hate people. I have no tolerance. What I learned is that I thought I had empathy, but I really don't. I have empathy for people that with people that try to help themselves, and people that have tried and show me that they've tried, I'll help them. But then you get the people that don't want to help themselves and then try and throw it all on you. And I thought I liked helping people just be happy in general. So my original career path was hotels. So I wanted to be in hospitality management. I wanted to run hotels, wanted to own my own hotel chain that was in the theatrical space because I liked art and theater. And I thought, well, why not put the two together? That became too hard basket. So I decided, you know what, after I climbed the ladder of a degree in hospitality management and worked for a couple of the five-star hotel chains as a hotel manager, very early, in my early 20s, got a job as a hotel manager for some five-star hotel chains, big ones, worked out that I actually hated it. There was a lot of bureaucracy in the hospitality sector that I didn't really want to sign up for. So I took my knowledge and went, okay, well, I like this industry. It's a shame that these parts are there and I'm young and all these people hate me because I'm half their age or a third their age and I'm their boss. Maybe I should just switch out and focus on what I love about the industry. So taking my education earlier on from hospitality onwards, I decided, okay, well, I like the guest relations side and I like the strategy side, but I hate being fake. So I left hospitality as a manager, went back to uni, did a diploma in marketing and advertising. So I could kind of tie that back to my hospo career and go, okay, I love hospitality. I love what it's about. Don't like the bureaucracy, but I can enter back into the industry as a marketer because I just love the industry and still wanted to be part of it, even though I hated working in it. I thought, well, I love the industry. It's not for me, but I love what it is and I love what it's about. So I went back as a marketer and freelanced for a very short term, hocking out myself and going, look, I don't know what to charge because I'm relatively new to this shit, but I know what I'm doing. Because I come from the industry and I used to run five-star hotel chains and I showed, you know, a lot of promise. So a lot of companies are like, okay, well, let's see what you can do. And then if you turn results, we'll write you a check. And I'm like, sounds good to me because I had only just come out with a piece of paper and I was, you know, feeling my oats, as drag queens would say. I thought I was top shit. So, you know, it was a lot of sinking and swimming in that period, but yeah, originally it was hospitality. Marketing then became what I was doing in hospitality and started my own self-trader brand back then. It was called Evocative Management. Mm-hmm. I liked the word and I knew what it meant. And I always wanted to evoke emotion. I know hospitality and tourism was about that. So I tied that to myself as a marketer for challenging status quo and things. And that's kind of where the career started. Because I did such a good job with hotels, other businesses started contacting me through word of mouth.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, clearly I've got a knack for this. So I just went, okay, great. Now I've got an idea of what people are paying me with their check bonuses because I didn't know how much to charge per hour or per project. I just worked out an average and kept saying yes to things. So very quickly I had about 80 clients in different industries. Asking me to do different things with marketing and different PR campaigns or advertising campaigns. And I just fluked it, really, because I was learning by going. But it was kind of a good thing because clients are like, well, there's no risk because we don't really know what we're paying for, but we know he's good at it, so he'll work it out. So I was that turn water into wine guy very early in my marketing career.
I love it. And so what sort of marketing were you doing for these people at this point?
At that point, I had cafes and restaurants coming to me that were small family-oriented businesses that had heard about me from friends of theirs that worked at the hotels that I had done the marketing for. So a lot of it was rolling out loyalty programs, revamping communications in PR releases, email marketing, developing EDM funnels, going through their existing social media strategies and picking it apart, looking at their website and going, well, this is shit, and then trying to make it better. Working out the user experience, looking at their brand through a lens that wasn't rose-coloured. Most of the clients like the fact that I come to them with a very harsh approach to, you know, harsh is probably a really harsh word to describe it. I am what people would call shrewd in my approach. If I have an opinion, I'll tell you, and if you don't want to hear it, don't ask. So And that's been my approach the whole way through. It's been digital strategy, web review, content. But even schools approached me after it as well, because I was in the art sector alongside my HOSPO career. And I had schools that specialized in music and theater approach me. And so I was doing their marketing. I had one performing arts high school in southwestern corridor of Sydney. They approached me, state school, competing with all these private schools that said they do drama and music, but had shit facilities. But this music school, this actual performing arts high school, had state-of-the-art studios and sound and lighting and qualified teachers that come from the industry. And I'm thinking, if kids want to learn music and theater, that's where they need to go. But the school wasn't focusing on that because they took all that for granted, because they're like, we're a music school, we should have this shit. So they never told people that they had it. And so other kids that were flicking around looking at schools with their parents were like, oh, this private school's got a drama music school, tick tick, I'll send my kid there, completely looking past the fact that this other school that had no private education fees and had a very high academic, considering it was a state school, it ranked nearly, if not better, or at the same level as the private schools. So I met with the principal of the school back then, who's now retired, because this is years ago, this is 2012, 2013, it's going back a bit, but this is at the start of everything when all the clients started snowballing, and through word of mouth. I met with her, had a chat, and she said, okay, here's my PR plan. This is what we've been doing. Please fix this before I retire, because I'd like that to be our way of working together, so I know I've left the school in good hands and you understand my vision of what I wanted to achieve while I can't, because she was in her 60s and she wanted out, because she's at a point where she's been principal for years, but she knew what she wanted but couldn't find someone to do it. So I dived in and I did more than what I signed up for. I did the strategy. I reworked their campaigns. I did a photo shoot. Redid their website, reworked their copy, met with all of the staff in the school and did admin training and PR training and workshopping on how to intake students, developed a scholarship program that would encourage students to choose that school over private schools. There was a lot of things I reworked for that school that they're still doing today. And it's always good when I go back and have a look. I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're doing now. I'm like, I'm still there. You know, 10 plus years on, they are still doing every single thing I gave them. So it's really cool and it's really reassuring. And it's humbling because I'm like, I did that partly because I wanted to give back to a school in my local area. But I also did it because I saw there was a gap and that school could have done so much better. So I do have this genuine passion to help people.
Mm.
When I say I have no empathy, I do, but I have empathy for things that I'm passionate about. And if it's businesses that have a gap, I chase it and I want to fix it. If it's people that go, I want to leave a legacy, can you help me? I'm like, yeah, absolutely, because you've got passion and I need passion. But if you don't have the passion to do what you're doing, I can't get enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
So like, I have to match that level. And that's what I learned early on in the career.
So, I think a lot of our audience could resonate with that in the coaching space, in that they really, really want to help people to achieve a goal. And whether that's in B2B services or B2C, you can really only help people as far as they want to help themselves. And it can be a really, really draining industry if you're constantly battling with people who are not doing the tasks that they promised they would do, and they're holding you accountable for their success.
Yeah.
And they go into that victim mentality. So now, having moved into, your bigger agencies, Axis Global and Sweet Release, you're dealing with much, much bigger clients and bigger customers. Do you see a different
bigger clients, bigger customers, and exactly the same rhetoric, exactly what you just said about people not pulling their own weight? I even find it now, like I found it when I was just myself and consulting people and developing strategies. I think I have more of that issue now. Even though I communicate to my clients very clearly from the start, I need you to do these things within this time frame so that we can get this done. Because if you don't, we're going to miss this deadline. This podcast won't be available. This magazine opportunity is going to be filled. We're going to lose this, this, and this. And our clients are like, yeah, I'll get it done. And then we give them 5 to 10 days because we think that that's realistic. So we don't hunt down things, piss off the editors, and they're like, nah, stuff you, you've been messaging us, and it's always yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. So we try and avoid that, but clients don't seem to understand, even though I communicate that all the time. And it's still a very strong reality in any business we work with that doesn't understand when they engage a publicist or a marketing firm what to expect, that there's this still element of, oh no, we'll just blame them because it didn't happen. It's like, no, no, it didn't happen because you have an element of accountability here. And we introduced a process during COVID to minimize this, but also to put clients on notice that it's a balanced relationship by having sign-offs throughout every single process. Because in the past, we'd be like, okay, if you don't get back to us in 3 days, we're just going to do it. Because that's our professional vitae, that if we send it to you and we've given you 3 days and you don't respond, fuck it. There's a deadline. We've got to get this work done. You've paid me for a service. We're going to do it. If you hate it, that's your fault because you didn't respond. But I decided to change that approach because I know people need more time. I go a million miles an hour as a person. So I adopt that in the business, but realize it doesn't work for everybody. So now it's, okay, if you don't sign off on something, we sit and wait. But guess what? The clock's still ticking, you're prepaying per month. And until you pull your finger out, we can't do what you're paying us to do. So keep paying, time's ticking. That then puts the onus on the client to do what we ask them to do. Because I have found in my career, when you charge someone by the hour or by the minute, they're more inclined to get shit done because they know, oh fuck, I'm paying for this and we're 59 minutes in, there's 1 minute to go. Like when you engage a lawyer, which is half the reason why I decided to go in that direction. So I'm at a point in my career now where I've learned enough working with different clients that they have quite unrealistic expectations at times. They want you to turn water into wine. I never promise that I can do that, but I do promise I think outside the square. So And I try and find different ways of doing things. You know, I don't just stick with one plan of attack. And if it fails, I don't A, B, C, D, E, F, G test that. You have to do that. And that's what I do.
Yeah.
But I find that clients, when they get that first fail because they didn't contribute to something, they will always try and pivot it and put it back on you. Yeah. And as a consultant, as a strategist, it's always best place and best practice throughout my career and growing my brand from being a sole trader to now having a company. With international employees in the US and in the UK and here in Australia. What I have noticed is putting the onus back on the client and having that regular contact, but also tracking the communication has been the most effective way of managing that issue you highlighted. And unfortunately, you still have it in a company scenario because people have never worked with a marketing agency before and you've got those teething issues in the first 30 days. Most of the time, they're ironed out. That's why in the first 30 days, we do a lot of hand-holding. So even though they outsource to an agency, I talk to them every week. Every week I have a 40-minute phone call with every new client, ticking things off, making sure they understand what we're doing. Do you understand how we work? Are you following the rules? Are you doing all the bits we need to get things done? And just so they get used to the process, because then we can kind of take a back seat because they get it. But initially, there's always that, I don't know, I'll get around to it. And it's like, okay, well, we've just missed half the shit we said we could have done for you. And that's not our fault. So, but it does happen. It's hard to mitigate at times, but I guess my way of always working around it is giving people enough rope to hang themselves. And then if I need to, I will always give them an extension of like 30 days if it's something that we can control. Yeah. But if it's something that's completely their responsibility, absolutely not. So I just think that it should be fair. It has to swing both ways. You can't just blame the agency if you don't do the job yourself. So. No,
totally. And I imagine because of, you know, like you said, your shrewd nature, although I think you're absolutely lovely and just direct and self-driven, people would think that, okay, God, Brayden, that's a bit harsh. But the thing is, like, you know, if people want that result at the end of the day, then yeah, this can't be 100% on you, because you can do a lot of things when it comes to coaching or with marketing.
Absolutely.
Except for be them. You can't. And so I'll tell you about an experience I had recently, because we come across this all the time, mate, where we work with small businesses and they're wearing every hat in the business. And we're like, okay, listen, we need to get all your fill in these three questionnaires before we can get started. And every week, I did one this morning, an onboarding call with a guy who hasn't touched his onboarding email yet. Just didn't know anything about it until we got on the phone. We need photos. We need those professional photos, and so we can get these ads launched this week. Photos are going to be ready end of next week. Amazing. Sweet. And then can we wrap this up? Like, we can't really. But I had a young lady I hired, 25-year-old graphic designer, and she had a timeline for me. She'd send me an email. I need this back by close of business Monday. And I was like, I've got to work here. And for that reason, we got great results really quickly because I was told when to work. So as someone who's learned this, for someone who's running a service-based business like marketing or consulting, coaching, do you have any tips on people getting started with that process of holding people accountable to their
goals? I do.
Very helpful.
Something that followed me very early in my career, because I did touch on the fact I started in hospitality, where you're educated that the customer is always right. Throw that in the fucking bin. The reason I say that, and I am very harsh with this particular statement, but I think it's something that's been drilled into any small business, is the fact that the customer is not always right. The reason for that in a marketing or PR business or an agency is if they were right, they wouldn't be talking to you. If they were right, they would never have contacted you. And if they were right, they'd have no problems with their business to start with. So the fact that they've come to you asking for help and then try and blame you because they didn't do the work, or like you said, Alex, fill out a survey you asked them to do and then it slows everything down, there is an exact example of what I was referring to before. When we say we need you to fill out an example given as well, just in return, is that we have clients that fill out PR surveys. We want to know what press releases you're comfortable us publishing and writing. We'll produce the content. Give us some dot points on what stories and angles you want to focus on that you're comfortable with for your brand. Then we go and produce the press releases. We send you the draft, you tick it off, and then we distribute it. But if you don't give us the dot points, what the hell are we talking about? What are we writing about? How do we know you're not comfortable with it? Just getting sent a draft press release and then we don't hear from you doesn't mean that you're happy with it. And I will never put my business or my client in a situation, even if they think that by not responding is a yes or a no, of a situation where we go and release that press release and it causes damage and the client goes, you damaged us. And it's like, no. Mm. There's this element of ownership here where any work that gets produced by you, making the client sign off on every single thing, especially when it's at the start of the relationship, is crucial. I find that it's crucial because it minimizes issues later. The other side of it is that we're maintaining relationship with a client, and something that I started rolling into my business. I worked with like big marketing agencies as an intern before I started my own. And then all the client work I got mentioned previously at the start of this interview, I did on my own without the agencies because they weren't long-term jobs. It was just, you know, a taste test, if you like. And when I was studying, try this out. Do you want to be account manager? Hell no. But what I did work out is that one thing that they kept on top of was having an account summary. And it's something that I kind of went, nah, I'll never have an issue with a client because we'll smooth it all out at the start and we'll never have any issues. Problem is, issues occasionally do happen. In my business, I've had 5,000 clients internationally. And while I'm quite shrewd and direct with regards to how I handle client complaints and grievances and clients that don't follow the rules, I've only ever had 47 situations out of 5,000 clients that have gone wrong with clients not following rules and doing what they're supposed to do and helping themselves so I can help them. Now, the account summary, I can't stress enough, keeping a running track record of who said what when, what got happened when, or what got done when, and the responses that flick between each thing. So if a client says, I never got that, you can go, well, on this day we had that conversation and then we responded and then you said this and then we did this because you told us to change it. But then 5 days later, you changed your mind and then you went back to this and asked for the same thing you asked for before. Being able to flick through and going, hey, where are we up to? And I do that. I make everyone at my agency do an account summary and plug in everything that happens along the way So I can refer back to it as a CEO and go, why has this client got the shits? And if I can't work out why, 9 times out of 10, it's because the client had lied about their expectations at the start, set unrealistic goals, or changed tact halfway through when they sign the contract. So the contracts you always do at the start should spell out what the expectations are, what the goals are, what the client wants, and you map your services to those expectations. Anything that falls outside that blueprint is a red flag or an additional service charge. And so communicating that to your client, that you're developing your marketing tactics or plans or services or strategies for the goals and expectations they set at the start with the surveys before they sign the contract, mitigates a lot of teething issues earlier on, because you do get rid of, lack of a better way of putting it, you do get rid of time wasters, clients that are searching for price tags, and people that want to spend a dollar to make a million. There's a lot of those businesses out there, and there's a lot of people that think, oh, marketing's easy, and if I pay a marketing agency to do it, I don't have to spend any other money. Unfortunately, you're paying a marketing agency to do the strategy and manage it, and there are third-party expenses. So communicating that at the start's really important. And does set that expectation at the start that the client may not always be right. And so having that account summary is a good protection mechanism, but definitely doing screening calls before you ever sign a new client would be my number one.
Yeah.
20-30 minute chat at the start. What do you want? What are your goals? What is your budgets? What are your expectations? Where are you now? Where are you trying to go? Sanity check that shit. Because if that client says stuff that goes, oh, hang on a minute, there's a problem here, then you can go, you know what, thank you so much for contacting us, sayonara. And they go find someone else. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to be put in a situation where you're working double or triple hours to satisfy a client that you said yes to, that you know is reaching too far with either unrealistic expectations and timeframes or a budget that you cannot achieve those results with. So, you know, when you're young, you kind of learn all that. I don't go through those situations now, and haven't done so for the last, God, we've been running the business since 2017 fully. So realistically, in the last 6-7 years, we've changed our approach and all the surveys now happen before the contract.
Yeah.
Making clients do the homework is really important, because it does make it easier for you as a strategist to go, well, you wanted all this shit, but actually you don't need any of it. You need this. And you can guide them correctly towards what they do need versus what they want, because wants and needs are very different.
Yeah.
And sometimes clients can be very disillusioned. Small businesses can have an expectation that an advertising campaign will sell a lot of product without realizing that their website or their content is shit. And so we can run an ad to shit, but that doesn't mean you're going to sell anything. So it's really important to get everything right. And so you get a client says, I want ads run. And then you look at the website and go, well, we can't, because if we run an ad to that website, you're going to sell nothing.
Yeah.
And you're going to spend a lot of money advertising people going, hey, yuck, I don't want to buy any of this because the photos are crap, or the words are wrong, or the price is wrong, or the website's too hard to use, or there's too many barriers to entry. So there's just some, you know, teething issues there to map out. It's screening your clients at the start, getting to know them before you even send a contract. Don't waste time typing up a contract unless you've done your research and you've got the information from the client first. And making sure you set those realistic expectations around what can and can't be achieved at the very beginning. And at least for the first 30 days, communicate. Communicate. Can't stress it enough. Don't just, you know, sit on your hands and wait for shit to hit the fan, because it will. Clients that don't know how agency relationships work, if you do that to them, they will just assume that work's happening because that's what they're paying you to do. So it's really important to communicate. If you hear nothing, message them and keep a record of every communication. That's my biggest stress to any small business. I've gone through experiences when I first started, having clients that I thought I could work with the same as each other. So I had to develop a system. These things that I'm mentioning are in my system that I follow with every new client, and have been doing so now for nearly 6, 7, 8 years. We've the plan keeps changing and adapting. Pandemic changed heaps of things. So there's new elements to it. But yeah, communication vital, and documenting everything is really important to safeguard you, but also to maintain the relationship. Because sometimes clients forget. They might see the email, they might remember to do it, and then 2 days later, oh, fuck, you know, took the kids to school, had to feed the horse, like whatever it is, something came up and they forget to do it. So you've got to keep on them and keep a track record. They're my biggest, takeaways on that, because I know that's a big issue. And as a small business, it only takes one client to write one shit thing online and you have to do a lot of damage control. So my mum's word of advice when I was growing up was keep everything and you'll never have an issue. So keep your text messages, keep your emails, keep your voicemails, download a software that records all the phone calls and you're sweet.
I love that. I love that. And it's super duper important for so many reasons. And I think communication is really, really one of the big ones, because most people, when they're working with a coach for the first time or a consultant or an agency, they haven't done that before, which is why they're here. So those first 30 days, like you said, that's a real, real hand-holding, giving that wow experience in the first 30 days. And I'd imagine that, like you said, you've created every solution off the back of a problem. Because negative customer experience has led you to have to fix something either that helps you or helps them. So that's really important. So I'd love to know, just from your neck of the woods, now dealing with 5,000 clients, whereas people, you know, we've got about 30, you know? So I'd love to know, it's quite clear that you're, like you said, your brain works at a million miles an hour. You're very on top of a lot of stuff. High-performing guy. You can handle a lot of stuff. How on earth are you keeping track of the sheer volume of things you've got to do? And not only that, how do you then show up on a day like today, energetic, present, and not, you know, worrying and checking your phone because you have 4 or 5 different businesses going on? Because that's really, really admirable to me as someone who's got a lot on my mind all the time. So, coach me
totally
on that.
And I have heaps of stuff on my mind all the time too, so I can completely empathize with you on that. As someone with high-functioning autism, I think the best thing that ever happened to me was being able to work out that I have that and using that to my advantage. I think when you go through a lot of life experiences and you go through things that are quite traumatic, you do take things away from that and you reflect on it and you apply it to your business. Without going into too much detail, if you want to know about my history, you can go to bradenreese.com. Now, with regards to your question, how do I keep on top of everything? Particularly with managing all the projects, having software in place that keeps a lot of things in order, things like monday.com, which a lot of businesses are now using, having Salesforce channels. We use Salesforce for a lot of communication and cross-runs that tracks everything, as well as HubSpot. If these are buzzwords to people listening, go and check these softwares out. They are great. Another thing that I use in maintaining correspondence, running track records with email, is mailtrack.io. That has been a lifesaver with sending invoices out and clients going, I never got it, when they've opened it 10 times and forwarded it to their friend, or clicked the link to Stripe and then didn't pay. So those software items are really good for accountability. Like I said, keeping a record of everything. The other side of it as well is that I have a team. So before, when I started, it was just me doing the sales, the strategy, the phone call. That was wasn't hard back then, because I had 40 clients and they were all different timelines, different countries, but different size projects. So over the years, we've worked with 5,000 clients collectively, but they're not all the same size. So, and that's probably another thing to keep in mind as a small business, is that if you don't have the capacity to take a project on, don't, because it can blow out in terms of timelines and what you need to do. So being quite selective of who I work with and who I take on, and knowing that my team can handle it, is really important. Because when I used to take projects on, I was a bit younger, so I was a bit more gung-ho and I would work 24 hours a day if I needed to. These days, I like to have a life. So I'm still human and have to work. I have to remember that part. So having an outlet's important. And so managing the projects is time efficiency, which, like today, why I'm available on this call is because I blocked this day out and I've got 7 other podcasts scheduled today and I've got meetings with other clients. So I wouldn't put the effort in if I didn't need to piggyback a whole bunch of shit on one day, because I have blocked the entire day out for PR, media calls, press calls, junctions, trade shows that I'm going to do talks to today, as well as a few phone calls with an accounting firm that I'm going to be engaging just to set a few things up with the company as we now move in the legal direction, because offering legal services changes a few things. So I need to have a chat to an accountant about trust accounts and all that sort of stuff. So that conversation's also today. So there's a few things that I've lined up that are all video calls, hence,
makes sense.
Time management there. Keeping on top of all the other business stuff, though, they're all siloed and they all run through the same business. So Sweet Release Agency, Saray Cabaret Productions, Axis Global Co. are all brands of Axis Global Co. Pty Ltd. In the past, when I was younger and had a lot of time on my hands and not many clients because I was starting out, I had time to flick an email on a phone, on an iPad, on a Mac. These days, I don't have that much time. So outsourcing and employing people, a couple of VAs in London, a couple of VAs in Queensland that chase up all the sales emails, chase up all the admin, and then having a family team around me now that are qualified in marketing, advertising, PR, digital business strategy, they all handball different aspects. So now realistically my job from what it used to be, which is doing everything, to now just working on strategy and brand ideation is primarily what I do now. So clients come to me and all I really do now, which is great, even though if a client says, I only want Braden to do everything, then they pay a pretty penny for that if they want me to do it. But ultimately most clients come to Axis Global or a variety of our brands and I do the strategy only, and then it gets trickled down through everybody else that does all their other little bits and pieces to make that strategy work. Yep. In the past, it was me doing everything. Could do that with 40 clients. You cannot do that with 5,000. But the 5,000 clients internationally, like I said, they're all varying projects. Some are 3, 6, 12-month retainers, and some are come and go. I need a website, build it. 4 months later, it's done, it's gone. That's the end of the project. And then a year later, they come back and go, could you write me a press release? So, like, it's not, we've got 5,000 clients on a Rolodex, which we've built over the years and what I started building when I was by myself. But we've got about 360 clients on retainers worldwide that are interchangeable. So, and when a client says, oh, I'm not renewing, I need a break, that's fine. You lose your spot. Next client that's in the waiting list takes the spot. And when we have a vacancy, we just constantly balance that timeline. But in terms of me, a lot of my responsibility is reduced now, which is great. Most of my job role now is putting out fires. If a client has an issue and I have to read everything, which is why I now get everybody to keep everything. And the other side of it is just making sure that strategies are working and keeping on my team's butt. But I don't really have to do that because they're all really passionate. And because I work with my family, they want the best for the business because it's family operated. And I couldn't ask for a better team to have family involved that love what they do in the areas that I've allocated projects to them. So that's been really handy. Yeah, that's the handy part.
I love that. I couldn't think of anything worse than working with my family, but hats off to you, brother. Multiple businesses, a question I ask a lot of people on this one, and sorry, we're kind of just going question answer, but you're giving such good answers to everything, so all inclusive that I just feel like, okay, nailed that topic, let's move on.
Blame it on public speaking. That's the problem. And when you've worked as a teacher in different unis and TAFEs and you do guest lecturing, you just want to smash the answer out. But if you need me to break it into smaller parts, just go, Brayden, stop. It's too much information.
No, that's what editors are for. Everyone's got their own style of chatting, and this is great. And for me, I'm getting a free coaching session here from the famous Brayden Reese. So when do you know in your heart, Brayden Reese, it's time that you can start another business without being detrimental to your previous one?
Look, for me, I've been quite fortunate because the brands I've created, they're all personal passions of mine. So I don't create something that I'm not passionate about. And it's something that a lot of entrepreneurs say. Is that you can't start a business or something you're not passionate about. And when you're passionate about something, it doesn't feel like work. Now, it still feels like work because you're putting in more hours than anybody else when they're working 9 to 5, because you are on call 24 hours a day. There's a difference. But when you're passionate about it and enthusiastic about it, it does ring true that if you are passionate about something, you don't really think about how much time you're putting into it because you're getting the end result and you love what you're doing. So when I created Soiree Cabaret Productions, that particular brand was built off the back of my career as a drag queen. Particularly because I had people that wanted to work with me, and I had people going, oh, wouldn't it be great if you had dancers? Wouldn't it be great if you had circus performers? And I knew a lot of people in the arts that were struggling. And I thought, well, I'm a marketer and a publicist. I could whip a brand together in 2 hours, build a website in 30 minutes, and then promote the shit out of this. And so I created Soiree Cabaret Productions off the back of friendships and people I knew in the industry that wanted work. So we put our first cabaret show together years ago as a test drive in Newcastle. It was just me and a friend of mine doing theatre shows at restaurants and wine bars. And it worked really well. And she was an absolute gem because she was also a PR background. So she knew how to drum people up. I was the stage person, but she was the grit behind the scenes then trying to pull it all together. And then the other side of it now, fast tracking from there, is that it's come so far that there's now music schools, dance schools, circus schools that my friends own that have students that want work. And so what better way to give back to that part of who I am and that creative outlet than to give people a chance to shine in the spotlight? So being passionate about it's really important. So Soiree Cabaret Productions is what that's all about. It's about creating cabaret shows. We may not run them all the time. It's mainly corporates that book them for their end of year parties or cruise ships and things like that, where I orchestrate a show, put people in it. It's the same formula. It's just different performers.
Okay.
But that's how that particular brand works.
Okay. So they all kind of rolled out. They seem to happen quite organically for you. A business just kind of pops.
They have to.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And Sweet Release is the same. If we pivot to that, I worked as a sex worker for 10 years. I'm not ashamed to talk about that. That's part of my life when I was working as a youth minister at a church and decided, you know what? Kids are coming out to me, and this is really confronting because I've got people that want to embrace their identity, and the book that they're believing a lot of and putting a lot of trust in is saying this is wrong, but God still loves you. And they were quite polarized with that, and so was I that age years ago. And I decided, you know what, I can't keep lying to myself and telling these kids God loves you while the church is telling me, no, Brayden, you're going to hell. So I left the church, and the story as the story plays out, I left the church and became a sex worker. Because where else do you go to kind of find out your sexual identity as a young gay man? And having grown up in the church and things, it was quite restricting. And so I pivoted. Off the back of that career, while also dabbling in marketing and PR, it made sense while meeting a lot of people running businesses and sex shops and dating apps and nightclubs that were struggling with their marketing. And every time they picked the phone up, a company that handles Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Qantas, etc., would say, we can't touch you because if we work with you, it'll damage our clientele because it'll affect our bread and butter clients. I found that quite insulting when I did the ring around and found out that what my clients told me was true. Because as far as I'm concerned, as a marketer, and someone in communications and business strategy and growth, my job role is to help someone solve a problem for their business, their service, or their product. I don't care what industry you're in. And that should never form part of the equation unless it's hurting somebody, or if it's, you know, if there's some sort of risk element there where people are getting harmed, then absolutely step away. I wouldn't get involved in that as a personal conflict of interest. But judging someone because of the industry that they're in without understanding the person, the product or the service, I think is completely the wrong approach for any business to take or any person to have. And so I decided to help these businesses, which is where Sweet Release came into the fold.
Yeah, Sweet Release being an adult entertainment marketing agency, yeah?
Correct, which was first. That was before Access. Release was first.
Got it. So that makes sense. So that seems like a really natural timeline then. That makes a lot of sense, how that happened. And then I guess that you went from that, and did those experiences you had with people saying you're going to damage our brand, did that lead you down the path of starting Access, which I dare say is a more conservative branding?
Access is very conservative, but as a company, we've got brands that are not. So from the perspective of doing what a lot of agencies have told me to do earlier on, is that you can't work with all these industries because this hotel chain will get the shits of you, and they won't want to work with you if they look at a case study that says you worked with an escort directory or you worked with a brothel or you did something for a vibrator. And I'm thinking, it's just a product and it's just a business. What the results we turn out for a business in any industry should speak volumes, not because, oh, the industry tarnishes the result. I'm sorry, if I took a business with one person on the directory and turned it into a 1,000-plus subscriber model at $40 per person a month, and that company's now making $10 million a year because of a strategy I rolled out, that is all focusing on. Yeah. Not, oh, it's an adult business, so that strategy means nothing, which unfortunately a lot of closed-minded people, bigots, people under a rock, generally will make the assumption that adult industry stuff is too taboo and it damages everything. Mm. If you don't understand something, you make that assumption. I am not one to make assumptions on anything unless I can back it up with research, which is how I always justify my arguments and why I'm so forthright in my opinions, is that you can challenge me on what I'm saying on this podcast if you're watching it and you want to comment on it. Better back it up with stats because I will look into it. You can challenge me on things, but you better have a reason for it, and it better be backed by fact, case law, legislation, everything. So when it comes to helping businesses, it was a natural progression for me to help an industry that helped me identify my own self and help me live my own truth as an individual, because I found that through the adult sector.
Well, that makes total sense to me. And it also it makes your journey seem a lot more that makes your journey make a lot more sense to me, because looking at your sort of resume, I was wondering where everything fit in.
Yeah, where did it all start?
exactly. But that makes perfect sense. And like, you know, you touched on before that if we want to know your whole story, go to bradenreese.com. I did that, and I saw that there was a lot of difficulty in your early years. You're from a rural town, struggling with, you know, being gay at a young age. I went in a place where I guess it wasn't, you know, hugely progressive maybe at that point.
I don't know. Probably we don't want to tarnish Campbelltown, New South Wales too badly. It gets enough of bad rap. Okay. But you know what? I have a really supportive family, which are part of the business, right? So that's always been a blessing. But I think when you grow up in a family where you're the first and only gay kid, media has a lot to play in how people perceive that to be. And my parents were cautious. They just wanted the very best for me and wanted me to be safe and happy and successful. And the media at that time in my life was pushing this narrative that if you're gay, you're just going to get AIDS and die. And so because the media was really heavy with illnesses, and if you're gay, you're going to get sick, and if you're gay, you're not going to be successful. A lot of that was being pushed through the news, and people's, I think when I came out in 2000 and end of 2009, 2010, a lot of what was on TV was all about how bad Mardi Gras parade is and the people that are involved and how dirty and sexually depraved it is. And because that was the story getting projected, my parents didn't really know much about what the gay community was. And so, you know, naively at that point in time, and just as much as it was for me, I looked at that and went, oh, my God, what have I done? And so there was a sense of self-loathing and a sense of, you know, where do I fit in the world? My parents have always loved me, still do, don't judge me. Again, back then it was confusion around what does it mean to be gay, because it was new information to them. And it took some time for them to process it. But they didn't change how they loved me or supported me because of it. They just didn't understand what does this mean now. So once they understood that part of it and knew that I'd be safe and happy and I'd be successful and it's all about how strong and resilient you are as an individual, my sexuality never became a topic of conversation, and it isn't. It's just been something that's been accepted. It's just who Braden is. And I'm lucky to have family that support that. But, yeah, growing up in a rural town, not very much rural, but, you know, Campbelltown, Western Sydney corridor, in that year, coming out as gay, going to a religious high school that didn't really have an open mind to anything other than boy meets girl, girl meets boy. So there was a lot of that. But I'm fortunate that I had a supportive family. So that was never an issue. My main crisis was when I left home and then tried to work out who am I outside the family unit. Yeah, that's where it played out the most. But I made it.
Dude, I'll say you certainly did make it, and you're a super duper impressive guy, and I'm really, really inspired by what you've done, because we're in a similar industry. What really is funny to me is that with so many coaches that we interview, they are helping people in a certain space because of dramatic or traumatic experiences they've had in the past. So if they've had trouble in relationships, and they help women who are struggling in relationships, or if they're, you know, had really serious financial hardship, they get through that and they figure out how to help people through that. For yourself, it really feels like because of your own journey to acceptance, it's led you to starting businesses that are so accepting of other people and promote people
Correct.
In a similar path, yeah. Which is so fucking cool to me. And I love working out why people do what they do. My marketing agency is for coaches, because when I was, had my nutrition coaching business, I was really struggling with it. And so now it's like, okay, how do we just get people conversations? That's all I needed back then, was conversations. And so now we help people do that. It's really, really interesting to see how someone goes into, you know, because no one wakes up in year six thinking, when I finish high school, I'm going to run an adult marketing agency. You know,
I don't think anyone in year six says, you know what, when I enter high school, I'm going to go to a private high school. And when I graduate, I'm going to become a sex worker, a drag queen. I'm going to open a marketing company, and I'm going to do all this stuff at the same time once I work out that church isn't for me. Like, I don't think anybody, like, most people would choose one of those things, if at all. But not at that young age. So I always knew I didn't want to work for anybody.
Yeah.
So that was something I had in my head from the end of year six, start of high school. I always wanted to be in charge. I didn't know how that would play out, but I knew I had a problem with, which is funny, going into law, but I actually love the law more than I thought I would, which is why I'm still going with it. But the one thing I noticed is I have an issue with authority.
Yeah.
I'm not someone that's a rule breaker. I will challenge the status quo all the time. That's something I live by as my own personal mantra. And I abide the rules and, you know, skirt grey lines where I can as a marketer and a publicist where you can to get the results for your client. But I find it funny that back then, when I reflect when I was younger, I had issues with people that couldn't even follow their own rules, telling me what to do when they weren't even doing it themselves. And so I never wanted to work for a company that did that. And throughout my earlier years, I worked in fast food and retail and all these things, try to find myself and work out what I want to do when you're young and you just get your first job, and your first job's KFC or McDonald's. That was me. I was that kid. But I knew I didn't want to work for people that didn't follow their own rules. And, you know, you just want to do the best. And that's kind of where it went from KFC to Macca's to Grady Union Cinemas to five-star hotels, where I thought, no, this is quality service. This is what hospitality is. And then work out, you know, I don't fit that sort of community that's judgmental, like the church community that I left. So I left the bureaucracy and I left the judgment. And you are right, I created brands that supported my own trajectory. But you did sum it up quite well when you said people that create businesses that are successful create a business because it resonates with them. And it is something that I connected with personally. And everything I've created was to create judgment-free services and environments where businesses of any industry can have access to what they need to excel. And that's ultimately what Access is about, which is helping businesses reach their triumph. It's not about, we're just another marketing agency. I want clients through Access to be able to realize their full potential. And at Sweet Release, it's always been about helping people enter the industry if that's what they want to do. It's a tough industry, the adult entertainment business world. If you want to learn more, go to sweetrelease.agency and suss it out. But it's very different to the mainstream world. And there's a lot of legal bureaucracy, again, that I have to navigate. I haven't been able to escape it, but I'm definitely not involved in it as much as I used to be. I'm more on the outside, which is more comfortable. So, and in a controlling, orchestrating sort of showman sort of approach, which is really interesting, just to touch on, had a friend that released a book about how we met. And she wrote a book called The Dominatrix Next Door. Someone I met in my entertainment career in the adult space, she's an absolute gem. And she wrote the book about how she got into the industry, how we met, and how us meeting changed the trajectory of her career. And she's a mum with kids, and she's very open about this publicly in her book. She's not just someone in the, you know, you've got to take that assumption that people in the industry are all single and desperate. She's a successful author, mother, works in education, has written this book. And it was just so humbling and an honor to actually see she's written a whole chapter in this book about how we met and how I inspired her by working with her and having her part of Sweet Release Agency as a consultant and a copywriter and doing work for me to producing award shows together and helping the industry showcase the talent in a different way. And, you know, that award show is no longer a thing, but it's definitely something that was part of Sweet Release's early story. And that awards program is where we work together. And yeah, so to kind of get that mentioned in a book where she talks about people have a very skewed perspective of Braden and or Jet, but it's purely because people, and she makes this comment, which is hilarious, people have this issue with him because they didn't read the fine print. And I think if people go into relationships knowing the relationship they're entering at the start, then you have a much more successful relationship moving forward, which is why I said, you know, we've had 5,000 clients internationally since 2017, but there's only like, in the tens of problematic ones that I've had to deal with.
Yeah.
So that's I guess it's a testament in itself that the other 1,000 plus read the fine print.
Yeah.
And I've had amazing results. And so it's really humbling to have that written in a book because there are people out there that find me very polarizing. And, you know, that's their opinion. Don't work with me. There's plenty of other agencies out there that'll touch you. You don't have to like me. I don't have to like you, but you'll never know. I'll still smile and wave and you'll still think I'm your best friend. But it's interesting to see that people's opinions have been a motivator for me. Kind of like, you know what? You can try not to work with me and eventually you'll have to come back and go, you know what? He was right. We really should have trusted him the first time round without, you know, making assumptions or things. I am a very forthright person, but I wouldn't be where I am today if I wasn't. And I know that. The resilience definitely pushed through.
Well, yeah, man, you're a man who, if you don't like something, you don't do it anymore. You don't accept it. You choose something else. You create something else and create them with success. And it's worked out for you and a lot of people worldwide, man. And I think you're an absolute pleasure to talk to or to listen to, at least, because you know, you definitely know your stuff, man. So Braden Reese, like, absolutely, what a pleasure having you on today, man. It's been super duper fun. For anyone listening, maybe it's been obvious that we had some issues, but you know, we got through it. There's something
we pushed through.
Yes.
We need like a blooper reel for today. We need a blooper reel. You know, we've had phone calls and SMSs between different cuts and edits today, but we've managed to pull it together.
Well, that's what we do. That is entrepreneurship at its core. It is just fixing things to make it happen. And no one knows that better than Braden Reese here, man. Dude, really, really, really fun. I'm going to get all of your links and everything in the show notes of this show. because that's where people are going to click. But in general, what's happening? What's happening till the end of the year? Anything you're super excited about?
Definitely, Access Global Co. being more instituted as a company, we're pushing in that direction a lot more. Yeah. Me working as a drag queen, there's heaps of weddings in line. I've pivoted. Right. So before I was doing a lot of club gigs and stuff. People want to find me again, the drag queen stuff, go to getaqueen.com. You'll never be able to spell my drag name. It's too convoluted. But there are cruises and weddings and things planned in the next couple of months, which is great. And then obviously the law stuff is all full swing. I'm only halfway through that career story, but eventually once all this law stuff's done, I'm actually talking to an editor.
Yeah.
Because they've said you need to write a book, and I'm like, yeah, but the story's not done yet. I'm not a lawyer yet. So once that becomes a thing, and then I've done my first few cases and won, which I know I'll be, you know, it'll be a breeze. I cannot see myself struggling too much as a lawyer. I'm too opinionated. All I need is the fact to back it up, and I'm great. So I think the judges or the magistrates are just like, you know what, you talk too fucking much. Case dismissed, get out.
Yeah.
But, but you know what? I am excited about that. And so especially with Access pivoting into law as a law firm is where I want to take it. So that's things that are happening over the next couple of years, next 2 years. But in the most immediate, it's definitely cabaret show planning with Soiree Cabaret for then. And then with, that's probably the only one that's really in the pipeline at the moment. Access Global runs like any other marketing agency. We never know what's going to happen the next day. Sweet Release is expanding, actually. That's probably the new thing to share, is that we have been incorporating accountants and law firms into the business, so that way we can offer a full suite of services to businesses coming in and wanting to leave and sell their business. I'd like to know we set them up for financial success, not just let them in and then let them go. I'd rather know we give them an in strategy and an out strategy, so that way they can work with us from the very beginning to the end. We love relationships. I love relationships that are built on that. So that's what we're working on at the moment, is definitely bringing in some more lawyers, more accounting. And because we are pivoting into a law firm structure, eventually we'll have our own in-house counsel. So these are all things that are in the pipeline. But yeah, never a dull day.
Never a dull day. And for anyone who is wondering, Charismatic is the name of the drag queen. Cara with a K, Zmatic, which I'll let you guys spell by yourself. But
Cara with a K and Zara with Zmatic with a Z. It's kind of like Liza Minnelli's little song. But yeah, don't try and spell it, guys. It's too hard.
Who's got time for spelling? We got
exactly. Just go to getaqueen.com.
Getaqueen.com. Mate, Braden, we could go on forever because you have such an interesting life and so many interesting stories to share. But you're also boy with 11 other podcasts today and 5,000 clients to deal with and like 6 books to write. So, dude, thank you again. Thank you so, so much for being here. It's been a real, real pleasure.
You too. Thanks for having me. And, you know, we persevered and made it through to the end. Win in itself.
We made it. I'll come down to Barrel. We'll go to Echelot. We'll have a drink. It'll be
some local eats. I do love Echelot. If not, we'll have a few. We'll knock back a few cocktails over at Briar's. Oh, I mean, not Briar's, sorry. Bistro Social.
Ooh, is that at Briar's? Is that what it's called?
No, Briar. Okay, stop right. You drive past Briar's on the way, and then Bistro Social is in Berrida Manor. It's that big castle thing near the golf course in Bowral. But they do the best porn star martinis.
Love that. Well, there we go. Yeah, very on brand, Braden Reese. For anyone who is listening, I love you to bits for that. Thank you for soldiering through any tech issues this episode. We love you. I will be here next week. Another episode of Coaches to the Moon. Thank you so much. Until then, peace out.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end. If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials, you can follow them, you can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.